Welcome to the Quill Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quill Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and we're reading my work in progress friendship album, 1934. Thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quill Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 34. It wasn't the best cup of coffee Dorothy had ever had, but it wasn't half bad. She'd enjoy it more if Nina Tarkington weren't hovering over her, waiting for a review. "Very nice," Dorothy pronounced after a second sip. "Maybe a touch on the strong side, but some folks prefer it that way." "Oh, I love a strong cup of coffee," Nina said, clearly pleased by Dorothy's verdict. "It's like a jolt of lightning." "Or is that a bolt of lightning? In either case, a good strong cup of coffee in the morning gets my motor going." Dorothy laughed. "You should write magazine advertisements for Maxwell House." "I'd love to be a writer," Nina admitted as she went to fill her own cup. "I was thinking about writing a children's book. I've been reading Harold, the Uncle Wiggily stories, and thought of one or two of my own. Do you know Uncle Wiggily?"
"The old gentleman rabbit? Why, I read every one of those stories to my children when they were little. And now my children read them to their children."
"I love how they end, don't you?" Nina took a seat at the kitchen table across from Dorothy. "And in the next story, providing our wash lady doesn't put my new straw hat in the soap suds and take all the color out of the ribbon, I'll tell you the story about Uncle Wiggily and Fido Flip-Flop."
"You've got that memorized,"
Nina nodded. "I've practically got the whole book memorized. I have one of those minds. Once I read something, I know it forever. I should have been an actress, really."
"Nina Tarkington probably should have been 100 different things," Dorothy thought as she surveyed the kitchen. But here she was, a housewife with not much talent for keeping house. Still, under Dorothy's tutelage, she'd improved. She'd learned to make lists and to keep to them, to set a small number of tasks to accomplish each day, to make a daily menu. Dorothy was glad that the Tarkingtons could afford a housekeeper. She suspected Nina would always need help to keep things running smoothly. That reminded her. "Now, you'll recall that I'll come tomorrow morning to help Dolores get settled into the job, but I'll be leaving a little bit before lunchtime," she told Nina. "Tomorrow's Alice's first day at her new school, and they're having a special luncheon for the family members." Although Nina was already aware that this was the plan, her face fell.
"I don't think I can stand it, Mrs. Johnson, you leaving us. Why, Harold is going to be heartbroken. He already asks for you first thing every morning, even on the mornings you don't come in."
"Harold will switch his affections to Dolores in no time, never you fear," Dorothy said. "She's a sweet, good-natured girl. And a hard worker, too."
"But she's not you."
"No, she's 40 years younger with a strong back and keen eyesight. I can't say either of those descriptions fits me anymore."
"Won't you come visit us from time to time?" Nina asked plaintively. "I'll make you lunch and you can give me a critique, the way you did with my tuna salad last week."
Dorothy was tempted to say yes. But then Wallace's words came to her. "You're always saying yes, woman. Say no once in a while, why don't you?" Still looking at Nina Tarkington's pleading eyes, she couldn't quite make her mouth form the word. "Maybe I'll stop by in a month or so to check up on you," she offered, "but not before that. Dolores needs a chance to establish herself in the job and make it her own. You two need to form a kind of friendship."
"Friendship?" Nina asked, sounding confused.
Dorothy supposed it would be confusing to someone who hadn't grown up with help, nor had never been to help herself. And friendship wasn't exactly the right word, as she knew from her own experiences. She'd been luckier than most in that she'd always worked for women who treated her well and seemed to understand she was a person in her own right, with a family and a life beyond the walls of their houses. She thought fondly of her first employer, Mrs. Rudolph, who let her bring baby Robert to work. The two women had never been friends or anything close to it, but they'd had affection for one another, and Mrs. Rudolph always offered Dorothy a cup of tea when she made one for herself. Sometimes Dorothy accepted. They'd sit in the kitchen, and Mrs. Rudolph would gossip about her sisters, who lived nearby and were always in and out of the house. Dorothy drank her tea and listened, and when she was done, she would take both of their cups and wash them in the sink, even though Mrs. Rudolph would insist that Dorothy not bother, that she would do it later. It was the sort of thing you'd say to a friend who was visiting, and Dorothy appreciated it, though she never took Mrs. Rudolph up on her offer. Next, she'd worked for Mrs. Overmeyer, who lived on Union Street, only a block away from Florence's new house. The Overmeyers were Jewish, and they had asked Dorothy to work late on Fridays and until sunset on Saturdays. They couldn't do any work for themselves during their Sabbath, even light the lamps. Dorothy would cook the Overmeyers' dinner on Friday night when the Sabbath began, and she'd stay late to clear the table and wash the dishes. Her mother kept the children in those days, and Wallace would come pick her up on Saturday nights so she wouldn't have to walk home in the dark. Dorothy found the Overmeyers fascinating. She especially liked serving Sabbath dinner so she could listen as they said prayers in Hebrew. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam b'rei peri hafen, Mr. Overmeyer would pray. Later, when Dorothy had been working for the Overmeyers a few years, she summoned up the courage to ask him what the words meant. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, Mr. Overmeyer translated for her, who creates the fruit of the vine. Dorothy shook her head. That sounds like something out of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is our Bible, Mr. Overmeyer had explained with a kind smile. We call it the Tanakh, but it is the same. She'd been so young then, she hadn't known that basic fact, that Christians and Jews shared a holy book in common. She was so young that she hadn't been embarrassed not to know that, though for some reason it embarrassed her now. Dorothy wished Mr. Overmeyer were still alive so they could talk some more about the Old Testament stories, but he'd died in the spring of 1925, and Mrs. Overmeyer had gone to live with one of her daughters. Dorothy, in turn, went to work for Bess. There couldn't have been two women more different than Ava Overmeyer and Bess Wilcox, and their differences had nothing to do with the fact that one was Jewish and the other Christian. Mrs. Overmeyer had been shy. Her every request was voiced as though she were asking Dorothy to do her a favor she didn't expect Dorothy to say yes to. She was often in poor health and would spend entire days in bed. Bess, on the other hand, was nothing if not vigorous, hale, and hearty. She beat rugs and corralled children with the same cheerful energy. Her problem, and the reason Dorothy had been hired, was that she tended to take on too much. Bess filled her plate so high with chores and tasks and projects that it frequently spilled over, and then her three lively girls would run straight through the mess. They'd gotten along from the very start. It helped, Dorothy always thought, that they were inclined to find humor in the same things and that they weren't afraid to laugh at themselves. They both enjoyed trying new recipes, much to Mr. Wilcox's dismay. He'd have happily dined on pot roast or roasted chicken every night, but Bess was always finding some new recipe or another in one of those magazines she read, the Ladies Home Journal or Good Housekeeping. One night, Mr. Wilcox had come home to learn that Bess was serving cold, molded jelly chicken for dinner, and he walked right back out the kitchen door. "I'll be eating at Linway's," he called as he left. Of course, he'd come back in the front door a minute later, but by that time, Bess and Dorothy were laughing so hard that they hardly noticed his return. Dorothy looked across the table at Mrs. Tarkington. Nina. She wasn't much older than Dolores Betts, who'd start working for her in the morning. Like Nina, Dolores had a young child, a girl, maybe two or three. That gave them something in common, something they could talk about. But would they become friends? It was hard to be friends with someone who handed you a paycheck every week, Dorothy thought. That meant they had power over you, no two ways about it, no matter how kindly that power was wielded. "Tomorrow, when Dolores comes, I want you to ask questions about herself," Dorothy instructed Nina. "Nothing too personal, just the sort of questions you might ask a young woman new to your social set. How many children does she have? What are their ages? Does she like to garden? That sort of thing. I want you to always keep in mind that Dolores is a person, just like you." Dorothy could say this to Nina Tarkington because Nina had no power over her. Alice's schooling and her books and supplies were all paid for. But looking at the young woman, one so clearly in need of a mother, even if she was a mother herself, Dorothy knew that Nina had never had any power over her. Dorothy had been in charge from the moment she walked through the front door. She smiled at the girl. "I promise I'll come visit you from time to time. I'll miss seeing you, Nina. I am proud of all you've learned in such a short time." Nina Tarkington looked as though she might cry. But after a quick swipe of her eyes, she smiled instead. And while it appeared she very much wanted to say something, in the end, she just couldn't find the words to say it. The next day, Eula and Bess accompanied Dorothy to Alice's school luncheon. Eula carried two baskets, one filled with fried chicken, the other with pies, one blueberry, and the other peach. "You know you don't have to bring anything," Dorothy fussed at her friend when they met in front of the school. "These rich colored ladies have cooks, just like the white ladies do." "But I'm not a family member, and this is a luncheon for the families," Eula said. "I don't want to be a burden." "I told Hannah you and Bess were coming, and she said that would be fine." Dorothy pointed to Bess. "Besides, Bess didn't bring anything." "But now I wish I had," Bess said. "Eula, can I carry one of your baskets? Preferably the pies." Eula laughed, handing a basket to Bess. "Nobody ever minded extra pie," she told Dorothy. "Just you wait and see." The women made their way to the kitchen to drop off the food and then joined the others, who were taking a tour of the school led by Dr. Cornelius Shepherd, Josie's father, who had retired from medicine and was the chair of the school's board. "We are indeed indebted to the Turner family and their magnificent, magnanimous generosity." Dorothy turned to Bess and smiled. The good doctor's grandiloquent speechifying was the sort of thing that tended to amuse them both. But Bess gave her a look that seemed to say, "I will not mock, not here." Dorothy could appreciate that. Bess stuck out enough as it was, one of two white women in a crowd of colored folk. It would be disrespectful for her to look the slightest bit amused by the good doctor's speech. Dorothy would have to keep her humorous thoughts to herself. Eula, on the other side, whispered, "This is the most beautiful school I've ever seen. To be honest, it's one of the most beautiful houses I've ever seen." That pleased Dorothy. It was a beautiful house and a beautiful school, and Sloane Street was a beautiful street, as pretty as walnut or oak, where Milton Falls' rich white folks lived. They walked through the house, admiring how the former family home had been transformed into a place of learning, with a science laboratory and an art studio, and a garden out back where the students would plant flowers and vegetables as part of their botany studies. Most marvelous to Dorothy's eyes was the library, its walls lined with books. Hannah had been offered the job of librarian, but to Dorothy's surprise, she'd turned it down after learning that next year Alice could attend the school on a full scholarship. "This will sound funny, I know," she told Dorothy after she declined the job, "but as happy as I am that my Alice will be educated in a school that will allow her to use every inch and ounce of her intelligence, I can't leave those other children behind. They'll never be able to afford the opportunity that we've given Alice, which means they need me more than the new school does." Dorothy understood, but walking around the small library that smelled of learned tomes and lemon polish, she could just imagine Hannah at that desk over in the corner, helping the students choose the exact right book to read. She could be introducing them to the best thoughts of the most brilliant people known to mankind. And yes, she could do that with the students down at the local school, but most of them wouldn't go on to be doctors or lawyers or teachers or the wives of doctors and lawyers and teachers. They'd end up in the mills or as the hired help. But they'd go to work knowing some poetry and philosophy, some wonderful stories that they could share with their children, Dorothy reminded herself, sparking minds and imaginations. Maybe their children would get a better chance at a better life because of what they learned from their parents, the ones that Hannah taught. She sighed. She wished change happened faster than it did, and that it happened for everyone. Every child deserved this school and these fine teachers and a garden out back to study botany. But for now, Dorothy would have to console herself that Alice, a little girl who would make the most of everything this school had to offer, would be here every day, ready to take it all in. That was a start, wasn't it? And, Dorothy thought with a smile, she could console herself that her work as a housekeeper was finally done. Oh, she'd briefly considered asking Bess for her old job back when she'd heard that Edwina was moving to Washington, D.C. But then she'd realized she didn't want her old job back. What she wanted was the daily life that she and Bess had once shared. All those cups of coffee in the morning as they made their shopping lists, all those lunch hours spent sewing. Those days were gone for good. Dorothy knew it, but that didn't mean she and Bess couldn't drink coffee together sometimes, chatting and laughing, being the same kind of friends they'd always been, right from the very beginning. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast. We're reading Friendship Album 1934, a novel by Frances O'Rourke Dow, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.